So now we can come to the last control flow altering, well, locally control flow altering statement, which is the switch statement, the step brother of the simple conditional statement. So there the idea is to switch based on a value of some expression and then dispatch as quickly as possible to the relevant code part that you specify in a case clause. So what you usually would like to go for, if possible, would be constant time. And the usual idea to do something like that would be to realize it with a jump table that at some indexable position holds a jump that then finally dispatches to the relevant code that you want to execute. So there's a two-folded process, one jumping to an indexable position and then jumping to the actual code that you want to reach. Yeah, but however, if you do something like that, you need to jump in a way that you can put an index in there. And therefore, we need to introduce a new instruction, which is this index jump, jumpy here. Yeah, so jumpy is a new instruction that gets as operands an index and a base address. And what it does is, in terms of machine state, you'll find that at first in RI there is some value Q, which is then taken and put together with the base address A into the program counter and serves as a new target of where the system jumps or retrieves its next instructions from. And in terms of semantics for the virtual machine, this just leads to one instruction to do. Yeah. So let's maybe jump right into the code generation for that. So it's a rather lengthy construct, very verbose, so to say, but it boils down into very few components that are really interesting. So there is the expression on which to switch, and there is case values which to match the runtime value against. And for each of these cases, we also offer opportunity to specify callback code in form of whatever statement or statement sequence you like. And for completeness, we also have the default case, which is matched whenever the explicit cases don't match. And then there is also callback for that. All in all, what we also emanate from is that we will usually find a break after each of these cases. If that is not the case, then well, we need a little bit of more work, but due to space reasons, we keep ourselves to this general case here. Yeah. So the code for that is, well, one thing you have seen already in the simple conditionals is that we of course need to evaluate the expression in question. So that's what we're going to do at first here, and we're going to find the result of that evaluation in register RI. What else as components we find here is that there is code given in form of this S0 to SK, and we need to find that somehow in memory. So for that purpose, we will do code generation for each of these statements and store them addressable with labels from A0 to AK for each of these alternatives, with AK being the default case. Yeah. So then in order to put that all into some kind of structure, what we also set as our central idea here is that we want to realize that with an indirect jump. So what we need to prepare for that is some well-known, well-addressable place in the code section, addressable with B here, where we put instructions one after each other so that they become addressable with some index I. Yeah? So each of them reside in their own cell, and you can just iterate through them by moving one cell to the next, from one cell to the next. So this is now perfect setup for an index jump. The only thing that we need to make sure of is that we terminate in an orderly fashion. So that's why we put this end of statement address label here, which we use in the final jump after each of the alternatives. So the only thing that we haven't seen now is this rather mysteriously colored thing over there, check I with some parameters, and well, this is considered to be so what I call a macro, so a collection of instructions that encode the desired behavior, and this would be in our case here that we perform a check of the boundaries for the register RI, whether it is between L and U, including L, and then the macro should perform the actual jump, the indirect jump to base address B and index for each of the alternatives. And well, let's focus on how this thing now works. So the check macro in its rather general form checks for a lower and upper bound and jumps based on a base address B. So what we have to do for that to work is we have to do the checking of the boundaries and jumping to B plus the value of the register. But since we have the start of the address B given here, we will have to normalize that with the lower bound in order to be able to address starting from index 0 to index U minus L, which is essentially this K. Yeah? Okay. And in case that these comparisons fail like that, what we will do is we will just jump to AK minus to alternative AK. So we need to index in the jumping table with K. Okay, good. And well, let's just dive right into the whole thing. So this is a rather lengthy wall of code. Let's try to decipher what is actually really done. So the central operation that's done here is the indexed jump based on the address B of the jump table. So much is already clear. What we have to make sure is of is that in RI we find the right index to jump to, then everything just works by jumping or falling through to label D. So this is the central dispatching. What else is there? Well, one thing preceding this dispatching unit, this is a thing that we can highlight here, which is labeled with E. So it's also a possible target to be reached by a jump or fall through. And this just loads constant K into RI. K is U minus L. And at the same time, this is the index of the default case. Yeah, so if we do so and then directly fall through, as is the case here, then what we will get is essentially we will get a jump to the default case. Yeah, so this is the default case. And in case we just jump to E, we will fall through there, we will reach a default case. Yeah, well, apart from that, what else are the components here? So at some point we have to tackle this lengthy wall of code. So let's have a look at what that is supposed to do. So in principle, what we need to encode is checking of lower bound as well as checking of the upper bound at some point. So lower bound is what we're gonna find here. Yeah, so first thing to start with is loading the actual lower bound in there and then performing a check whether the value of the expression found in RI is actually really greater or equal than the lower bound. This is what we're supposed to do here, and in case that this is the case, continuation will just go on with a fall through. In case that this is not correct, then we will just instead jump to the label E, which is what we see here, the default case. So this is wired correctly. So the next thing that we find is all of a sudden a random sub appearing, and well, this is a thing that just encodes the actual normalization of the address. So this is encoding here the subtraction of the lower bound from the value ri. So if we do so now, when we want to continue our comparison with the part from up there, we will now not need to compare to the upper bound, but instead to a normalized version of the upper bound, which is coinciding to be this k here. So that's what we're going to find here. So there you see that there is the loading of the k, and the comparison of the expression's value and this k here. And here we have a comparison with greater or equal. So this this checks whether ri is violating the boundaries. In case that this is violating the boundaries, what will happen is that we will just fall through. So it's the green case here. We'll fall through to the default case. That's good. That's what we wanted to achieve. In case that boundaries are instead kept, we will just jump directly down to this patching. So this is what's going on. So this seems to be linked quite well. Of course, you might have already noticed that in our example, we had the cases starting at zero. Here, the check macro is a little bit more generic, so we can just check for some segment between lower and upper bound L and U. And if we don't have to do that, but have the lower bound being zero, then we can spend a little bit less of about normalization and all that. So yeah, that's how we can modify that then. So of course that works for a few of the switch statements quite well. There are a few caveats, however. So there is this issue of where the lower bounds of the whole thing actually is. So if the tail starts with zero instead of u, we don't need to do the subtraction. We have already talked about that. The other thing is that if we have kind of a guarantee that the interval is kept, then we can simply just omit the check. Yeah, it doesn't need to be there. Instead, the only thing that we need is maybe normalization, but then an indirect jump from there. So depending on how the which code you find, you might want to manipulate this scheme. Also, in general, switch cases are, particularly if they are occurring within often repeating code segments, are a field where you can optimize a lot. So if the values of the cases are quite distributed all over the space of the variable, then if you realize that with a jump table, then you get then you end up wasting a lot of memory. Yeah, so in that case, something like a so-called if ladder would be probably preferable to implement that even for the whole thing, in order for the whole thing to not waste so much space. A few other ideas is, well, if you do this if ladder in a cascade, so in a tree, you can bring it down to just a logarithmic number of tests, which might be still not particularly nice, but maybe acceptable for some cases. However, if your numbers just have things like small gaps being a thing like up to three cells, a jump table might still be smaller and faster as the if cascade would be. Yeah, so there's a certain threshold when an if ladder, if cascade is more convenient than the table-based approach. Of course, what you could also do is combine both of these approaches by generating several jump tables for each of the consecutive cases that you have found in your case space, and dispatch to each of these jump tables based on if cascades or ladders or anything. And yeah, so this is there's a whole variety of optimizations that are going on in that field, and you can spend a lot of thought on finding the optimal way of generating code for switch statements if you are after these kinds of effects. Then the last thing maybe to mention for switch statements is that ways of optimizing code generation for that is, especially if you go to if cascades, organizing the layout of these cascades in a way that you optimize for particular use cases. So for particular use cases, you know or find out via things like profiling that certain paths are executed more frequently than others, then you might organize your if cascade in a way that pays respect to these hot paths in that sense, and put them in the beginning and dispatch to them right away, so that for these hot paths you only have to go very short paths in your cascade or ladder in that sense. Yeah. So these are all ways of coming up with an optimal strategy to generate code for switch statements that is fast and space saving in that sense. Yeah. Okay, and with that, I think we're done with all the intra-procedural control flow things for now.